I am very apprehensive about this sermon. See, today we start a vision series. Last time we did this was 2 years ago, and you might remember that series we started in January. We called it 2020 Vision. Less than a month after we finished, the world shut down because of COVID. So I'm afraid I'm going to start another pandemic with this sermon series today. So a little apprehension, but it's time to talk about the future. Last year, our governing board appointed a group of people made up of equal parts, senior leadership of our staff, and lay leaders of our church. You can see their pictures scrolling across the screen right now. This group met together on 5 different occasions for 6-hour sessions each time. In between, we did a lot of reading and we had assignments and work we did. So a lot of investment of time and energy from this group. We worked with a Christian consulting firm called Oxano, developing the governing board's goal for us, a long-range vision for the future of St. Luke's. And so that is what we did. And at the end of the series on January the 30th, I'm going to roll that out to you. We're going to kind of share with you what we have been and currently are working on as a future vision and give you a chance to give us some feedback and share with us your thoughts about it. But between now and then, on these 3 Sundays leading up to that, I want to sort of prime the pump. And I want to talk about the mission of the church. Not St. Luke's specifically, but the church. What is the purpose of the church? Does the world still need the church? Now, I'm not trying to be dramatic in asking that. I think it's a very relevant question in a time when increasing numbers are leaving the church. If the world needs the church, then why? To help us in this series as kind of a guiding metaphor, I want to tell the story of another church. A small little church in a very, very remote village of Normandy, France. So remote, in fact, it has been decommissioned as a church for over 100 years. They have just one service a year on a very important day, June the 6th, D-Day. Now, why would I use as a metaphor at a time when people wonder, what is the future of the church and do we really need it? Why would I use a church that has not had weekly services for over 100 years, that only has one service a year, that doesn't even have a priest? Because of what happened in that little church on June the 6th, 1944. I got to visit that church back in October when I traveled with our former senior pastor, Dr. Carver McGriff, and his wife, Mary Ann, on their 10th tour, retracing Carver's steps when he fought in the Battle of Normandy in World War II. Before we went on the trip, Mary Ann asked if I would lead a devotion on the bus one morning, and of course I agreed. And shortly after that phone call, I read an article in a Christian magazine written by a Methodist pastor out in Colorado entitled Being Church in a War Zone. This pastor himself got to make a trip to Normandy and while there visited this little church in the small village of Angonville-au-Plan. He learned about the story of this church, and I saved the article. I thought that'll make a great devotion. So the end of our first day of touring, we're on the bus going back to the hotel where we were staying, and Mary Ann said, would you do your devotion tomorrow? So I said, sure. I hadn't read the article in a while. I pulled it back out. I'm reading through it, and I'm really getting inspired all over again about the story of this church. And then I thought, how close are we to this village? Might we be able to actually go and see this church? So I asked Mary Ann, and she knew of the church. She knew its story. She said, I've always wanted to go there. I've never seen it. So she called the hotel owner to find out how close we were. Now, Carver and Marianne had become good friends with the owner of this hotel and their family because of all of the years of their going and staying there. They're like a big family. And so the hotel owner said, "Oh my goodness, that's our church. It's not a regular worshiping congregation anymore, but we have a relationship with them. In fact, my husband and I plan to be buried in that cemetery when we die." Well, that was all I needed to have a full sign from God that we were supposed to go to this church the next morning. The only thing standing between us and that was Bob Zare and his tight schedule that Bob plans for our trips. But once I got Marianne involved in the effort, Bob came around and said, "Okay, we'll go there tomorrow morning." So we did. And they even had the mayor of the village show up to give us a greeting in this little church. I think we got a picture of that, don't we, guys? Maybe, maybe not. Somewhere in there. Nope, not that one. All right, you guys work on the pictures up there. Anyway, the mayor greeted us. It's a good thing he did because he had the key to open the door and let us get inside of this church. Now, what brought us to that church on that morning was what happened in it on June the 6th, 1944. The invasion of Normandy was codenamed Operation Overlord. The first wave of the operation was the dropping of paratroopers who would be on land to provide support when the beach invasion began at dawn. Now, for those paratroopers, this was a dangerous prospect. Not only were they landing in pitch dark night, but Germans had flooded the land anticipating that this might happen. When the paratroopers dropped in the water, if they weren't able to cut free their parachutes in time, they would drown. Many of them did. Others suffered other perils. In fact, there was one picture up there a minute ago of a nearby village where a paratrooper was caught on the steeple of the church. To this day, they keep a replica up there. Now, can you imagine going to church every Sunday and you look up and you see an actual mannequin on a parachute dangling from the church roof? They do this because of the people of Normandy and their commitment to preserve the history of their liberation. So back to the story. Two 19-year-old paratroopers named Kenneth Moore and Robert Wright were dropped from separate planes. They both had their own harrowing experiences surviving the landings. Their job was to set up a medic station for the wounded. So Robert Wright was near this village. He went to the church and decided to set up a medic station there, and soon after, Kenneth Moore found his way to the church, and soon after that, the wounded started arriving. They would go out with these wooden wheelbarrows and grab wounded soldiers and put them in it and bring them back to the church. The sanctuary became a triage unit. The pews became like hospital gurneys. To this day, you can see the blood stains on the pews from where they treated soldiers on June the 6th, 1944. Remarkably, during that first day of the battle, a German officer came and knocked on the door of the church. He said, "Can I bring my wounded for treatment here?" The young medic said, "Sure, as long as they leave their guns at the door." To this day, you don't know if those blood stains are from German blood or American blood. Now, outside the walls of the church, the battle raged. The control of the village went back and forth many, many times. German control, Allied control. All of the windows of the church were shot out. Inside today, you can see on the walls, the ceiling, the floor, marks from bullets and shrapnel that hit the building. But inside the church, they continued this mission to rescue and to save lives. After three solid days, day and night, Moore nor Wright got any sleep. They kept at this work nonstop. After 3 days, two German snipers had been hiding in the steeple. They came down and they surrendered. Wright and Moore took their weapons from them and said, "Now get to work." Even the enemy was included in this mission. The Battle of Normandy lasted almost 3 months, and over 400,000 people died, soldiers from both sides, including civilians. But in that little church, they saved at least 80 people. And that village has wanted to preserve the story of that church. In fact, they have replaced the windows with ones that tell the story of the paratroopers that liberated them. And another window where you can see, maybe in the bottom of it, not so clearly in this picture, the Statue of Liberty and the names of Robert Wright and Kenneth Moore. While we were there that morning, the owner of the hotel and her husband joined us. She had been battling cancer. And I asked her beforehand, "Do you mind if we pray for you while we're here?" And she gladly accepted. So we all circled around her and prayed a prayer of healing for her as the sunlight streamed through those windows, reminding us of that story over 70 years ago, of the healing and the rescue that went on there. And in our own little way, we were continuing the story. And that's why I say, this is one reason why that church is a good metaphor for the church today. Because for all of the unknowns about our future, for all of the divisions within the church, one thing can be said for certain, that our world will continue to be a place where people need healing and restoration. In that article I referenced by Bob Kaler, the pastor out in Colorado, he writes in his own visit to that church, "It occurred to me," he says, "that Wright and Moore were doing the ultimate form of pastoral ministry in that holy place. They had been baptized by fire and ordained by duty to continue their work. They were priests officiating over a sacrament of broken bodies and shed blood. Their tireless work revealed a much deeper truth about what the church is about, a hospital for broken people, no matter their side or whether they are combatants or innocent civilians. These priestly medics seem to understand this instinctively, to the point at which even their enemies recognize the importance of the mission. They were being the church, not just using one for an aid station. With this story echoing in my soul, I began to have a deeper awareness of the wounded people I saw around me. I noticed them walking around places like London and Paris, standing in doorways, puffing a cigarette, or crammed into a pub looking for some solace or community. I saw it in the hollow eyes of business people walking quietly to a job they might have hated, and in the immigrant trying to find his way in a strange new land. Casualties are stacking up in a culture where people have become commodities and pawns in a consumeristic war for their bodies and souls. What sort of ministry will reach them? It will be the kind of ministry that will risk everything to save people around us, no matter who they are." Acts chapter 16 tells the story of Paul setting out on his second missionary journey. He's retracing the steps of his first journey. He goes back to the churches he and Barnabas started. But then, halfway through the journey, Paul wants to set out into new territory, places he has not yet gone. It says that he wanted to go to Asia. Now, that's not the Far East like we would refer to Asia today. It was a province in the Roman Empire that was all of the way to the edge of what we call modern-day Turkey. It's where the city of Ephesus was located. No wonder Paul wanted to go there. Ephesus was a happening place. It's where Mark Anthony went to hook up with Cleopatra. It's where the It people hung out. No wonder Paul would want to go there. But listen to what the story says. They went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. Now, why would God forbid them from going there to a place where they could influence influential people with the love of Jesus? We can't say. But nonetheless, the story continues. They attempted then to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. Now, how did Paul experience this being forbidden and not allowed? We really don't know. But what we know is that Paul definitely felt this was God getting in the way. Here was Paul pursuing a vision that he felt was from God, and now he's being prevented. So he goes north and westward to the very corner, again, of modern-day Turkey, to a city on the Aegean Sea called Troas, the namesake of the mythical city Troy. And in Troas, Paul only knows one thing for certain. I was following a vision. I was pursuing where I felt God wanted me to go. And now I don't know what's next. I don't know what God has for me next. I don't know where to go from here. Could that describe us right now? That maybe we were pursuing some clear goals and aims in our lives. We were on our way and the world shut down and we don't know why it happened. But now all we know is I can't say for sure what's going to happen next. I don't know what's ahead. Could this be our modern day Troas? You know, 2 years ago in that vision series, we named a number of significant things we felt God was putting before us at St. Luke's. Mobile food pantries, pop-up food pantries, 2020 first-time guest in 2020, a new location of St. Luke's, starting a building program that took up the long-range plan we developed way back in 2013, and then everything shut down. And now we don't really know what's next, and we can't say for sure. What do we do when we're in Troas? Well, we might do what Paul did. You see, Paul remained steady until he received a new vision. Again, listen to the story as it continues. During the night, Paul had a vision. There stood a man of Macedonia pleading with him and saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." Paul gained a new vision in his life, not because something was given to him, but because he was given the opportunity to help another, to reach out and respond to that just very simple request, "Come help us." And a willingness to come and help and serve others, Paul received a new vision. And remember where Macedonia is located. In the Bible, what is termed Macedonia is all of modern-day Greece. Paul left Asia Minor and crossed the Aegean Sea and came to the city of Neapolis. It's modern-day Kavala, Greece, this gorgeous port city. In fact, later this year, Susan and I are leading a trip that's going to combine the Holy Land with the travels of Paul, and we're going to go to Kavala. In fact, Bob, we've still got places available, so just contact Bob Zaire or contact me at the church if you'd like to learn about this trip, how to be a part of it. When Paul crossed to Kavala, what happened? He crossed continents. He brought the gospel to Europe. All of the cathedrals of Europe today, all of the popes who ever lived, the eventual Protestant church and the bringing of Christianity to the Americas happened because one person responded to somebody's plea, "Come help us. Come help us." It will always be that way in the church. The future of the church will always depend on people who are willing to respond to the hurts and the needs of folks around them who say, "Come help me." And they respond not because it's in their own self-interest. It's because they understand God has put me in such a position for a time like this where my life can be used to meet the hurts and the hungers, the bleeding of people around me. And there are a lot of ways people bleed, aren't there? Yeah, people bleed physically, but people bleed, I think, more so emotionally. And many times people carry their hurts inside within them because they don't feel there's a safe place to let that out. And when the church becomes that safe place to minister to the wounds of people around us, God gives us a future. There are a lot of unknowns about our future. How is our world going to be different? I don't know. How will our job market be affected? I don't know. Will all of the things we once did eventually return the way they were? I don't know. But dadgummit, this I know. This I know. That as long as a church will say we exist for the purpose of helping those who are not a part of us, ministering to the needs of those who are around us, God will always give us a future, and the church will always have a need, because people around us in this world actually do want to know that somebody cares about what they're going through, that somebody's concerned about who they are as people, and they are worth love and attention and healing. God will use us as a church for that. That card that Pastor Nicole mentioned earlier, I want you to take again, because we left that third question to reflect upon now, and I hope through this week ahead. How can I offer healing? How can I offer healing? I hope you really will pray that prayer, but let me give you the warning that should come with it. If you pray that prayer, God will answer it. And God will probably answer it before you're ready. God will show you people to help before you were perhaps prepared to help them. But God will never ask you to help somebody without giving you the ability to really help them, whatever that looks like, to make a difference in their lives and to have a positive impact. One of the ways we might consider doing that today is through an opportunity that's just come to us as a church recently. We have received a $100,000 grant from the Department of Education to distribute to families for rental and utility assistance. There are hundreds of families in our Washington Township experiencing housing insecurity and living with deep fear and uncertainty. And often, in these households, what is revealed are unhealed family challenges that the financial strains are a symptom of. So our benevolence team is looking for volunteers to help, especially people with bilingual Spanish-speaking ability. That really helps, but don't feel like if I don't speak Spanish, I can't help. Yes, you can. Most importantly, we need compassionate volunteers who are great listeners, can share resources to support families, and who are willing to offer prayers of healing and hope. Now, after the service today, there's a table just right outside in the gathering area where members of the benevolence team will be stationed and can tell you more about what this is going to look like. And if you're interested, wanting to find out more information, talk to them, give your name if you're willing to let them know, I would like to help in whatever way is needed. That's one way we can be of help and healing. But I tell you what, when you pray that prayer, how can I offer healing? I believe God makes us aware of things that we just easily walk by every day. But when we're thinking about it, when we live with this openness, okay, God, how can I be of healing? All of a sudden, God stops us in our tracks in a situation where we realize, oh, I guess this is what that means. And in simple ways, we can make an impact as a church on people because we care. Let me close with a story. Some years ago, I was in a church and in a nominating committee meeting. As we do in every Methodist church every year, we nominate people to serve in positions of leadership. We were looking at the position of lay leader, and somebody at the table suggested a name, and I thought, you know, that's a great suggestion. It was a man who was a leader in the community. He had just come into our church a few years before, but he got super involved. He was well known by a lot of different groups, and I thought, hey, that's a great choice. So I asked him out for coffee to talk with him, and to ask him to serve as lay leader. And in our conversation, I said, you know, I don't think I even know how you came into this church. He said, oh, that's an easy one. He said, as you probably know, I have a history of cancer. And some years ago, when I was going to one of my regular checkups, I found out my cancer had returned with a vengeance. Stage 4. It just was not good. I was on my way home from the doctor's office, and I stopped at the grocery store to pick something up, and I passed a couple who actually, I found out, attend this church, and I know them, but not real well, but we just said hello to each other. They said, how are you doing? And I did kind of the obligatory, oh, I'm fine. And then the husband said, well, forgive me if I'm prying. You don't seem fine. Are you sure you're okay? He said, I was vulnerable, and I did what I never do. I opened up and told them the truth. The wife then said, is it okay if we pray for you? He said, oh, sure. I can use all the prayer I can get. And he started to leave with his cart, and they said, we meant right now. He said, I was standing in the produce section, and there are people walking all around me. And I think, what are people going to think? And then he thought, I might not even be here a year from now. What the heck do I care what people think? He said, sure. They came over and they laid their hands on him. And right next to the cucumbers, near the oranges, they prayed for his healing. They prayed for God's purpose on his life and what God wanted to do through him, and that God would work through the treatments he's receiving and the doctors. And he said, and as they prayed for me, all of a sudden I just felt this peace. I felt this peace. He said, I realized something I needed. Of course I wanted physical healing, but in that moment I realized I need something more in my life. I need this peace I feel right now. And I decided that a church that has members like that, I want to go visit. And the next Sunday was my first Sunday, and I've never missed one since. A church that cares about people they don't even know very well, to want their healing, is a church I want to be a part of, he said. I don't think he's alone.